Welcome to In Moderation,
the show where we give you a moderate dose of info, sarcasm, and we already know we're not approved. Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Episode 20 something doesn't really matter. And as
hey,
an introduction,
got the first digit right.
It's 20 something. I know it's 20 something. As an introduction that we didn't plan at all. Hey, Rob, how'd you sleep last night?
I didn't. Thanks for asking.
Hey, that's a good transition because right now we have a guest where we're going to be talking about sleep. So why don't you introduce yourself? Because again, we know we're terrible at it.
Sure. Happy to do it. I'm Sujay Consagra. I'm a child neurologist and a sleep medicine physician by trade. Sleep is my life. I treat kids that have a variety of sleep disorders and recently have been out on social media trying to educate folks about how great sleep is. So it's good
to be here.
Love it.
Oh, yes. That's the thing that I always tell people about and they immediately roll their eyes. I don't know what it is about sleep, but as soon as you tell people sleep, they're like, yeah, I know. Like, I don't do it. Like, I don't know what it is. What
it's
is
a
it
cultural,
about sleep?
You know, it's I'll tell you what it is. It's a cultural thing. You know, I feel like we've been raised in a society that tells us that we shouldn't be sleeping and we should wear sleep deprivation like a badge of honor. And the less you sleep, the harder you're working. And, you know, lots of misperceptions. And honestly, we just didn't know much about sleep science until like the last few decades, and it's taken a while to sink in. So I think that's what it is. It's a
You're 100% right with that, especially because like I will listen to like, you know, the president will say something like, I only sleep 4 hours a night, and I get it. I'm like, no, please don't tell me that. Listen, that means you have the missile codes launched, numbers, whatever it is. Like, don't tell me you're sleep deprived. That's not good. Please tell me you sleep 8 hours
a
night.
More impulsive.
Button am I supposed to press again?
I don't really remember.
That's right.
I'm
like
getting
your
too
neurosurgeon,
much done.
You know?
Come on.
You don't want your surgeon saying they're not sleeping. You don't want your pilot saying they're not sleeping.
Imagine
and you don't
you're
want
going
your
in for your surgery and they're like, world. Fuck, I did not sleep well last night. Let's cut them open. Like, that's not good.
Well, healthcare and sleep deprivation is like a whole other topic we can talk about, but it's scary. You know, it's kind of frightening. And I mean, you should probably have the right to ask these questions to your surgeon. Like, did you sleep well last night? Like, how much did you sleep? How long have you been on call? Because it probably affects your outcomes. But at this point, we don't ask those questions.
Well, it's a good thing I'm not performing open heart surgery today.
Man, I don't even want to get down that rabbit hole. Listen, I think a good place to start with sleep is what is sleep? Now, for the listeners who have never heard of sleep before, why don't you tell them a little bit about what it is?
Yeah, it's a fairly new thing. You know, some people are into it. Well, yes, sleep, the definition that I like, it's a reversible state of perceptual disengagement from and decreased responsiveness to the environment. That's my definition of sleep.
Wow.
It's reversible, thankfully, right? I mean, it's reversible because you wake up in the morning. You have a decreased level of responsiveness. You're not unresponsive when you sleep. That's why, you know, you might toss and turn on your bed all night. You don't fall off your bed. And you also have like some sense of how much time has passed while you're sleeping. And if you've ever had a dream where the fire alarm is going off and it's actually your bedside alarm, you know, you can incorporate some of that external sensory stimuli into your sleep state. So that's the definition that I like. Everybody has a slightly different definition, but
that was
like
the sleep version of dihydrogen monoxide right there.
Yeah, dihydrogen. Water. Yeah, it's the fancy term. What do you want to sound smart? Like, I work as a sleep tech. So for anybody listening, I think I've talked about it on this podcast before, but I work as a sleep tech. So I help people with sleeping disorders. But when I want to when I don't want to talk about people's dreams, I say I'm a polysomnography technologist. Because if you say you work in sleep medicine out and about, they're always like, you got to study me. I'm like, yes, I know. Everyone sucks at sleeping. It's all terrible. You want to talk about your dreams?
Yep.
They really don't mean much. I'm sorry to break that news if you're first hearing this now, but dreams are kind of, at least from what I've seen, pretty much mind garbage.
Yeah,
garbage.
That's what
mind
I call
garbage. Yeah, that's harsh. That's harsh, Liam. Yeah, I mean, we really don't even know what dreams are. You know, like, are they just a byproduct of the fact that we get into these weird sleep stages? You know, are we rehearsing? You know, new learned skills. Nobody really knows. Yeah, it could be mind garbage.
I don't want to really get into, but basically, like REM is when your brain starts to like you know, move some of the memories around. Basically, you're storing memories kind of more into your long term memory, going from your short term memory to your longer term memory. And during that transition, there's like theories that like, oh, it kind of plays in your head like a movie, and that's how your mind copes. But again, we don't really know, as far as I'm aware yet, really what dreams are. So they're just fun or terrible depending on the night you had.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it can really bother people. You know, it can lead to a lot of sleep disruption for folks that have recurrent nightmares. It's a challenge. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I guess just kind of start with sleep. Like, you know, I guess you go through the basic questions, right? Like, okay, how much, I don't really know anything about sleep. How much sleep should I be getting per night?
Yeah. So the typical adult, the range is 7 to 9 hours is average. Now, when it comes to the amount of sleep you need, people say, okay, well, I get 7 every night, but I'm still sleepy. And it's funny because that range is not permission to sleep how much ever you want to within that range. That range is what encapsulates what the sleep need is for the vast majority of adults. That. And so what your sleep need is genetically determined. Like, you can't really change it. So you might be an 8.5 hours. I'm an 8.5 hour sleeper. Some people are 7 hour sleepers and they do just fine off 7. I would die with just 7 every single night. I would not do well. So 7 to 9 is average. There are short sleepers and there are long sleepers, but it's the vast, vast, vast minority of the population. And it's tough for the long sleepers because they are labeled as being lazy and not wanting to get out of bed. And but that's just the genetic hand they've been dealt. And short sleepers are the envy of everybody, like, you know, in like healthcare and like, you know, in the corporate world, because they can just churn it out. They tend to be high energy. They tend to be very positive folks. Tends to run in families. And so it's, you know, that's just their genetic hand. So
do you know any associations between, like, I don't know, I'm asking, you might not know any, but like between like the short sleepers, do they have any other, like, you know, is there any risks that come with that? Increased risk for, you know, serious diseases or anything like that? I mean, I don't know.
It's a great question. None that we know of. You know, we think their short sleep is actually a byproduct of a genetic change, a genetic polymorphism that we think lets them go through sleep cycles more efficiently. So it's still an area of research that's needed. But no negative consequences. They seem to function great during the day. Don't need caffeine. Don't have that lull that a lot of us experience. That as long as they're getting their, you know,
so we all just collectively don't like them. Basically, is what you're saying.
That's probably true. Yes, that's true.
I need 9 hours. To conveniently leave the room. I'm definitely not one of those short sleepers.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Definitely more than 8 to 9. Like, I try and get 8 to 9 every night. Yeah. That's how, you know, I feel best. And I have a 5-month-old right now. So, you know, you do what you can. But I mean, it's just, so don't feel bad if you're like, I need the 8 to 9 hours. And
Absolutely,
I think
not.
You're absolutely for right sure. with that. They do get kind of labeled as like, oh, you just, you know, you need to buckle up a little bit more, right? You know?
Yeah. And this is why I like to tell folks, especially in the corporate world, like, don't compare yourself to your boss, you know? Yes. Like, I've had folks in my department, they're like, oh, my boss is sending emails at 2 o'clock. I should be able to grind it out till 2 o'clock. No. You know, your boss is probably in that position for a reason. They probably can get by on very little sleep, you know? And that's
as
probably
the person
not you.
That is working to 2 o'clock in the morning, please don't do that.
If you don't have to work overnight, don't do it. I do it and it's terrible. Right. It's, you really don't want it. You don't.
No.
We could get into that later about like night shift and how shitty it is. But anyway, so we don't want to be on here for hours and hours. Okay. So why do we need sleep? What's the deal? Like, we just decide to do it because it's fun. Like, what's going on?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's becoming an increasingly hard question to answer because there's so many reasons why we sleep. You know, it's kind of like being like, hey, why do we wake? You know, like, why are we awake? Well, like, there's a lot of reasons why we're awake, you know?
Right? That's a much better question. Why can't we just stay asleep?
I'm going to steal that. When people ask me, I'm actually going to steal that. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, so I'll tell you, you know, so some of the reasons we think it's good for energy conservation. You don't need to be awake for 24 straight hours to meet the needs your body has to maintain hydration and nutrition, etc. We think that it's good for memory consolidation, right? We move a lot of our memories into long-term memory storage when we're in deep stages of sleep. We know it's good for unforgetting. So you don't remember what you had for lunch 5 days ago because your brain forgot that while you slept, because
you don't need that.
You know, you want to have room. You want room for other information. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's also active brain cleaning that goes on. There's a fascinating paper. It shows that the fluid that runs between your brain cells, it opens up and it washes away toxic proteins that build up throughout the day. Tons and tons of reasons. But it's really conserved nicely throughout, you know, evolution. Like if there wasn't a great reason for it, there's a famous evolutionary biologist. He's like, it's the worst mistake evolution's ever made. Because what are you doing while you're asleep? Nothing. You're like a sitting duck for predators. You're not mating. You're not feeding. You're not doing anything to promote your survival. Why is it so conserved amongst animal species? There's got to be a good reason for it. And it's probably because it maintains us at our, you know, top standards when it comes to brain performance during the day.
I don't need to drink lemon water in order to cleanse my brain. My brain does it on its own.
It adds.
I'm not saying the lemon water won't help. But, you know, your brain has been cleaning itself fine for eons without the lemon water. Oh, yeah.
Lemon water is so good. So, because I think that really shows you across animal species, right? Like, we see it. It's not just like a human thing. So we know, like, this is a part of life. Like, this is necessary for, like, all animals. We all do it. It's important. I do find That's it right. interesting that, like, between, like, I've looked at animals, like, how much they sleep, and that can vary a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not, I'm not an animal expert or anything, like, but I know giraffes are, like, one of the ones that sleep the fewest number of hours a day, whereas, like, koala bears sleep, like, 27 hours.
That's
like,
exactly, they sleep pretty exactly much.
He's not
right.
an animal
yeah.
expert. He just knows all these that's, random that's, animal facts.
Yeah. No,
tell
totally
us all
right.
about
yeah,
the mating it, habits of the red panda, yeah, Leo.
Shush. Go ahead.
No,
go
I
ahead.
Mean, it's, I mean, animal sleep is fascinating, actually. But yeah, you're right. You know, koalas tend to be the biggest sleepers. The bigger the animal, usually the more they sleep. You know, that's the trend amongst animal species. And, you know, animals have adapted a myriad of ways to sleep despite their environment. You know, like dolphins, we talk about sleeping half their brain at a time. You know, we talk about other species that have like a kind of like a quiescent time where they're not really that active, but they're kind of really, you know, quiet and
right.
looks like sleep.
Sharks
we're not quite sure if
it's
sleep.
Thing. It's weird.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of these marine folks that actually have to come up for air, you know, they yeah. can't sleep. Otherwise you would drown in the water. So yeah, sleep is fascinating. And the other weird thing about animal sleep is that, you know, we talk about melatonin and right. how melatonin is, you know, is helping us. It's the dark hormone. Well, you know, nocturnal animals also secrete melatonin at night. And for them, melatonin tells them to do the opposite. It tells them actually it's time to be awake.
I actually didn't know that.
You know?
That is interesting.
Yeah, so,
that is fascinating.
Yeah, so it's kind of a fun little, you know, yeah, veterinary sleep stuff. That's about all I know, though, in animal
sleep. Veterinary sleep. Oh, spent. Man, what are I'm you getting into? That's yeah. I love that. Okay, so, I mean, we need sleep. For a lot of different things, you need sleep. So if you didn't know that, now you
that's
do.
That's right.
Good. So if someone is now struggling with sleep, I think we should. I'm sure one of the main reasons people, like, listen to this, like, okay, my sleep sucks. It's shitty. I want to yeah. sleep better. So, like, they want to know, like, some things that they can do. We could probably get into supplements and stuff. But let's get into, like, the tips of just, like, what you can do throughout your day to make sleep easier.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, like, the low-hanging fruit, which everybody that has a true sleep disorder rolls their eyes at because they're like, we've tried all that basic stuff, you know. But I got to start there. You know, I got to start with the foundation, which is sleep hygiene. So if you're not right. practicing good sleep hygiene, you should try to practice good sleep hygiene. You know, sleep hygiene is a cure for sleep disorders caused by poor sleep hygiene. So five
that's
main kind of elements.
That's where I brush my eyes, right?
You know? Brush your sleep.
That's right, yes. Gosh. If that's part okay. of your routine,
now
you
I'm
go
just
for
thinking
it,
of a
Rob,
toothbrush
no problem, yeah.
to the eyeballs, and I hate everything about that so
yeah,
much.
That,
okay,
can't, that can't help. That can't help.
bacteria in there? Oh,
yeah, that's pretty nasty. Well, routine is important. So having, you know, three or four yes. relaxing activities before bed. It's important to, you know, when you're laying in bed, you want to use your bed ideally just for sleep and intimacy yes. and not for, you know, your room for exercise, et cetera. You want your room to be comfortable, quiet, and cool. 68 to 72 degrees is kind of what we usually tell folks okay. on the cool side. You want to avoid things that are going to disrupt your sleep. So bright lights in your face at nighttime, nicotine, alcohol, caffeine, all of those are sleep disruptors. Yeah. And you want to try to keep your schedule the same weekdays and weekends as much as possible because yes. it's really easy, especially for night owls, to push your bedtime late, right? I mean, Friday night, yeah. Saturday night, really easy to stay up and then sleep in, particularly for teenagers and young adults. It's really hard to move your circadian timing earlier. That's why it's hard to travel from west to east, much easier to travel east to west. That's why spring daylight savings, which we just had, is a rough one because you're asking your body to do everything 1 hour early. And that's yeah. just hard to do. So you want to try to keep your timing the same. That's the foundation on which we then build yeah. for other sleep related issues.
I need to just stress again. I need to stress again because people always roll their eyes at me and I don't care. Fuck you. I'm going to say it again. You going to bed at the same time is so important. And you can, like you said, on weekdays and weekends, because I think a lot of people on weekends, I go to bed 3-4 hours later. Like your brain likes routine. It helps so much. If there's one thing I would say, it's going to bed at the same time because your brain just wants to do the same thing and it just makes it so much easier for you. So if you can, try and go to bed at the same time every night.
That's right. So, be a friend to your future self is what I tell yes. people. Like be a friend to your Sunday night self, you know, yes. like don't kick yourself in the foot Friday, Saturday, and then make your future self suffer. Yeah.
So the one thing I shouldn't be doing and that I probably shouldn't have done last night is pulling out my phone and watching TikToks that make me angry and anxious that are slandering me. And so I sit there all night going, I can't wait to make the response video to that.
I don't know if that's the worst thing you can do, but it's up. I feel like it's pretty up there with some bad. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, you two are kind of in the spotlight and, you know, in prime, you know, target for people that, you know, have different thoughts and feelings, et cetera. You know, the, you know, TikTok and all these platforms are really good at getting our, like, our cortex and our limbic systems activated and getting dopamine revving up and norepinephrine revving up and all the neurochemicals that are not ideal for sleep. You know, those are the ones that you want to shut off, the norepinephrine, the dopamine, et cetera. And so, yes, I purposely make sure I'm not looking at any of the comments if I'm scrolling and looking at social media, because if I come across something that angers me, it's going to be make it much harder to fall asleep.
Yeah.
So,
Especially just screens in general, not great for your sleep. I say try an hour before bed, but I know we're all there, you know, like you're scrolling before you go to sleep. I think we've all been there.
Best thing I did for my sleep habits was making the room dark. So no screens, no lights, putting a little bit of tape over the surge protector lights on my plugins. So they're not glowing all across the room.
Working in sleep medicine, I've noticed a wide range of some people. Like, I need a little bit of light, too. If I have any light, it'll destroy, you know, like, I will just be waking up all the time. So find kind of what works for you. And, you know, I prefer, nice and dark, a nice dark room and cold. I like in, like, the 63, you know, degrees Fahrenheit. Like,
that's
I have no idea what 63 is, but I like
147 Fahrenheit or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. No one cares. When it's America. Cool, dark. What would you say, like, you know, just for people, some pre-bed routines, like, do you have anything? I always say, like, I like a shower, actually, like, before bed, like, a nice, like, warm shower, because actually if you take a warm shower after you get out, your body cools down because, you know, you have that water on you, and just kind of that cooling effect can kind of help facilitate, you know, relaxation, at least in my experience. So that's something I like, but, you know,
that's totally right. Yeah, there's actually good science to support that. I like a warm shower, and it artificially raises your body temperature, and that quick drop off can help you fall asleep. The same reason why we don't recommend exercise too late if you're having trouble sleeping, because it raises your core body temperature and it stays high for longer. It's harder for that to calm back down. So if you have trouble sleeping, exercise is not your friend late at night.
But it's funny because earlier in the day. Like, if you exercise early in the day, it can help you sleep later. But if you exercise later in the day, that can be. So the timing, you have to find that.
That's right. Now, that being said, some people exercise late and fall asleep is fine. And that's the time they can exercise. Go for it. I don't want to stop you from exercising. That's 100% the time that you have. But, you know. So the other things, you know, anything that you find relaxing and calming. So, you know, like your typical stuff, brushing your teeth, getting, you know, wash your face, getting your clothes ready, reading a little bit if you want. People brushing your eyes, as Rob likes to do, you know, whatever works for you, you know, and avoids excessive stimulation. Some people like to practice mindfulness or meditation, whatever works for you. There's no magic. Yes. You know, there's no magic here. It's just find.
Well, there is magic. It's called playing with a kitten.
pet your animals.
Yes, as you hold your kitten right now. Yeah. We should talk about animals in the room too, you know.
And I did want to go back to, because you said avoid alcohol, and I know I always get people like, oh, but alcohol helps me fall asleep. Yes, it does reduce sleep onset, meaning it helps you fall asleep faster, but it kind of just fucks your sleep. You know, it fragments it, means you wake up more, especially your REM sleep. Your REM sleep is super important, so it'll fuck that up. Like, it's really try and avoid alcohol before bed, especially large amounts of alcohol, because your body will be dealing. Because alcohol is a toxin, it's a poison that your body has to deal with. So you don't want to dealing with that as you're sleeping, which is, you know, other things like eating large meals right before bed. If I prefer to have like a small snack or something, just because otherwise I wake up hungry. I don't know, fast metabolism, whatever. I wake up 3 a.m. like I'm starving. Yeah. So if I have something small, a little bit of protein, cottage cheese. Yeah, I do like it.
Mentioned a lot of episodes ago, I like a little bit of popcorn.
Something small. But if you have a large meal, that, and then I'll deal with GERD, gastric upset. You know, if you have a large meal, you're already dealing with, you know, heartburn, that sort of thing. So then try to avoid those.
And then, we're talking about just our blood sugar, you know, our sleep. The nice protective thing about sleep is when we fall asleep, our blood sugar doesn't change all that much. You know, it's kind of protective. So you're not bottoming out your blood sugar at night. Well, if you go to bed after like a huge meal and your blood sugar is kind of staying high the whole night, that's not great for you either. So lots of reasons to avoid a big meal before bed.
Okay, so yeah, and is that pretty much seal it on the tips? If anything, like anything, I'm just trying to think if there's any other like tips for sleep. Keep the room dark, cool, something to relax. Oh, I did want to say like one thing that I do see a lot of people, they wake up after like an hour or two and then they try and force themselves back to sleep. Is something I see a lot. Like they just lie there.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
So
this is now the next level. You know,
Yeah,
so go ahead. Set the foundation. I'd love to kind of build on, which is, you know, you're getting to folks that might fall into the insomnia realm. You know, insomnia is like now a big umbrella. You know, sleep hygiene issues are not equivalent to insomnia. You know, insomnia, the classic form is folks that have this kind of conditional arousal where they lay in bed and they're like thinking and they're worried and the bedroom becomes a place. It's kind of like a battle in your mind of like, go to sleep. Why can't I sleep? Geez, it's going to be a terrible day the next day. Yeah. So Rob's raising his hand here. Yeah. So this is so many adults, so many teenagers, and even some older children can have issues with our classic form of insomnia. The long fancy term was psychophysiological insomnia, but it all just falls under the bucket of insomnia. So the core answer is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And a lot of the things that people recommend as part of CBTI, it sounds a bit counterintuitive to what you might think if you're suffering from insomnia. So for example, and again, I'm giving just general advice here. And for anybody that's out there listening that truly has insomnia, find a sleep specialist, you know, find like a sleep psychologist or a sleep therapist. They can do wonders for you. And if you don't have access to one, there are some online resources that are, I think, fairly legit that you could probably access. But as long as it's CBTI based, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And the whole goal is to reverse that process of excessive arousal response when you're laying in bed. You want the bed to be your friend and not your foe. You want sleep to be a welcome friend, not a foe.
Which I think brings back to what you said earlier, where you said like the bed is for sleeping. So a lot of people just hang out in their bed and just watch TV or do other things.
Yeah.
Which if you can avoid that and just this, your bed is for sleeping, their couch and other things are for everything else. Try and make your bed just where you sleep.
It's amazing how powerful your brain is and how quickly it links things together. Like when you walk into like your gym, you know, you're revved up, you're ready to go. Yeah. Your brain knows what happens in the gym. You know, you walk into your favorite restaurant, you're going to start salivating before you even see the menu because your brain knows what happens there. Right. Yep. And so that's what you want your bedroom to be, the place your brain's like, yeah, I know what happens here. Let's start shutting things down. Yeah.
Okay. So, like just step by step through what goes on with me basically is starts getting late at night and I'm like, okay, time for bed. Head to bed, turn all the lights off, lay down, and then just pervasive thoughts, anxiety. I basically bottle up all the anxiety from the day and then release it at night. And then, you know, I'm laying there. It's an hour later, it's like, okay, can't sleep. Turn on the TV, play a game or something. And then it's just, you know, next thing you know, it's 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. The main question I often ask for a lot of the teenagers that I see in my clinic is when you're laying in bed, do you actually feel sleepy and tired and your brain just won't turn off? Or do you feel wide awake? Like you're just ready to go, you know? And, you know, Taylor Swift said it best, you know, midnights become my afternoons, right? This is like a delayed circadian rhythm. When your midnight feels like your afternoon because you're wide awake, you know, and you're going to bed at like 3 or 4 o'clock. And so some people have both night owl tendencies and insomnia, which makes it hard to fall asleep. And so the classic kind of cognitive behavioral therapy interventions oftentimes include sleep restriction because most people think, well, I'm only going to sleep 5 hours. Let me lay here for 10 and see if hopefully I can sneak out 5 hours tonight.
Right.
But the opposite is actually what you should be doing, which is restricting your time in bed to try to fill, you know, a good chunk of that with sleep. It doesn't have to be perfect. And so we usually restrict down to the number of hours that somebody reports are actually sleeping each night. Like, I'm only sleeping 5 or 6. I'm like, okay, we're going to narrow your sleep window down to 5 or 6 hours. And then once you're sleeping that time consistently, because you're chronically getting sleep deprived with that timing and you're sleeping more and more of that chunk, then we start to open up that window. And so that's called sleep restriction, which is one of the most effective ways to, you know, help with classic insomnia.
So that's really interesting because, like going back to what you said, what we were saying about how if people naturally sleep longer, they shouldn't feel bad for sleeping longer. That also goes right into this, where if you need to take time to sleep shorter, don't feel bad about not going to bed and staying up and doing stuff and restricting that sleep window. Don't feel bad about it.
Yeah. So if it's part of your cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, plan, yes, you shouldn't feel bad about it. And know that, you know, intentionally you're kind of sleep depriving yourself. But know that if you have a terrible night with a 6-hour window, the next night's going to be easier to fall asleep. And if the second night is a terrible night, your brain is keeping track. Your brain knows that you're supposed to be getting sleepier and sleepier, then it makes the third night that much easier. So at some point, you know, your brain accumulates enough of a sleep drive that you're going to fall asleep and hopefully stay asleep for a good chunk of that window. And then you start opening things up.
Okay. I like that.
I will say for people that, you know, if you wake up during the night, because a lot of people tell me they sleep for a couple hours, 2-3 hours, they wake up and, you know, they're just awake and they try and force themselves back to sleep. Now, you do have kind of have your sleep does go in cycles. We have so many things to get to. I don't really want to get too into the nitty gritty, but basically you go through these cycles and they'll happen every few. You go into like REM sleep every 90-ish minutes, give or take. And then you'll kind of wake up from that and you'll go back into another cycle. So you'll have these throughout the night. So after a REM cycle, you might wake up and you might feel a little bit more awake, and trying to force yourself back to sleep can be really difficult and frustrating. Anyone who's alive, I'm sure, has had a time where you're lying in bed trying to fucking sleep and you're like, I can't. And it's so frustrating because you're like, this is my body needs this or I die. Why won't I sleep? Like, this is so stupid. So I recommend personally, I think getting up out of bed, not trying to force your sleep, just going for a walk, I love to listen to a podcast and go for a walk. I find that relaxing, but whatever works for you, something that is just away from screens. And
Liam, what's a good podcast for people to listen to?
I like The Dollop and Sawbones and My Brother and Me. Oh, wait. Wait a second. Hold on. You were trying to get us.
This is a podcast.
So you go ahead.
Yeah. So you've gotten to the core of like the next CBTI technique, which is stimulus control, which is you don't want to spend too much time awake in bed. But the one important thing that I'll go back to, which is what you mentioned, we all sleep in sleep cycles, and it's 100% normal to have multiple awakenings at night. You should. Every human being wakes up at night. You know, your infant is going to wake up. You probably know this already, but your infant's going to wake up multiple times a night as your infant goes through sleep cycles. It is normal, and it's not a failure of your sleep. So many people get into this kind of catastrophization where they're like, I'm awake now. This is terrible. My sleep has failed me. No, it hasn't. You've done exactly what you're supposed to do, what your brain is supposed to do. So don't consider awakening a failure. The second thing is if you're in a situation where you're getting frustrated, it's been more than like 20 minutes or so, you're like, I'm not sleepy. Yes, the cognitive behavioral therapy technique number two is, you can get out of bed for a little bit, do something boring, relaxing. Usually don't recommend, you know, getting too active or getting into something that's too interesting, something that's really just kind of calms you and relaxes you. You know, read the, you know, if you have a copy of the Yellow Pages, read the Yellow Pages or something, and then get me. Some of you probably know the Yellow Pages are that are listening, you know, rare, yes, but you know what I mean? Like a magazine or something dull and boring. But then the other part of about this, I love the technique called paradoxical intent, which is another CBTI technique, which is when you're laying in bed, instead of telling your brain, God, why can't you sleep? Just fall asleep. Why you're failing me and revving yourself up. Instead, you tell yourself, you know what? I'm awake and I'm totally fine with that. And I'm going to try to lay here awake quietly. I'm actually going to try to stay awake, just restfully, calmly awake in my bed. Oh, look, I'm still awake, but that's okay. That's what I'm trying to do. And that sometimes takes that pressure off of trying to fall asleep and paradoxically you end up falling asleep. So that's called paradoxical intent.
I love that because I see people like in the sleep lab, I can see their thoughts like through the camera just because they're so frustrated. They're just like,
them that no one will ever sleep in the lab.
Liam's got a superpower.
But it's just because they're so frustrated, right? And they can't sleep. Yes. And I will tell you this. I will tell people, we are very poor at judging our own sleep. I get people every single night in the sleep lab who swear to me they didn't sleep at all. And I've listened to them snore for hours. I have all their brainwaves. They absolutely slept. We're very poor. If you are in bed for 6 hours and you were awake for an hour, lying there for an hour awake feels like six. So you feel like you were awake all night. You will not remember the times you were sleeping. So try not to be too hard on yourself. I'm going to say that over and over because you get into this cycle where you get frustrated with yourself. And the more frustrated you get with yourself, the more it's harder to fall back asleep. So I love what you said. Just lie there. I'm just going to lie here. I'm just going to relax. It's fine. A big deal. I'm not going to get frustrated.
Yeah. We call that it's fascinating. We call it sleep state misperception where it's as you get older, it actually tends to become more of an issue and caffeine will make that a lot worse. And so people that, you know, have oftentimes is multiple awakenings where you have fragmented sleep and then your brain puts all those together thinking you're awake the whole time. Like I did a sleep study when I was a sleep fellow as part of my, like, you know, it was a part of a study and I could have sworn I was awake for like 45 minutes straight. And then I was scoring my own sleep study the next day. And I'm like, I was in like stage two non-REM sleep for like a good chunk of that time. So I had pretty wicked sleep state misperception. So
I'm sure I would be surprised
how often you fall asleep. Yeah.
I'm sure I would do the same thing as someone who works in sleep medicine. I'm sure I would say I was awake during the night. So like I tell people, it's not your fault. Like the morning questionnaire will ask you how long it took you to fall asleep. You will get it wrong. Literally everyone gets it wrong. It's okay. Just make your best guess. Like,
totally.
Don't be too hard on yourself. Jeez.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, we got into some of the sleep tips. Is there any other thing else, I guess, you wanted to add towards like just kind of
I mean, the CBTI kind of goes on and on, but I'll tell you that the other thing is, you know, that we talk about decatastrophizing. So this perception that everything is going to be terrible if you don't sleep, et cetera. And, and my tagline here is, you know, as a sleep doc, I sometimes have to tell people, yeah, sleep is important, but let's not make it like our primary life focus. You know, like it's important, but it's not that important, you know, and my tagline is, sleep is important, but not important enough to lose sleep over.
I like that.
Think about that for a little bit. It's just not important to lose sleep over.
Well, I mean, I just want, so if we're through there, I had so many people ask me like questions and stuff. And I'm like, listen, I'm going to ask the doc when we get like when we start talking about sleep, because I've gotten so many questions from, especially like people asking about any connection between ADHD and sleep. Like, do you know anything?
Yeah.
Like I have so many things, anything that you have, people are just like, please, anything to do with ADHD and sleep. I'm struggling. Like,
yeah. Really, I'm happy to talk about that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you anecdotally, I do see folks that suffer from ADHD that certainly have a harder time going to sleep and turning their brains off, et cetera.
Right.
And oftentimes, particularly for children, we see that if you have a sleep disorder like sleep apnea, it oftentimes mimics the symptoms of ADHD, where you have hyperactivity, impulsivity, you know, hard to focus, et cetera. And so, the question, chicken egg, like what's causing what? Mm-hmm. I always say that if you suffer from ADHD and you worry about your sleep quality, you really want to make sure you're finding somebody to help you with that sleep quality, because that might improve the ADHD symptoms as well. So really kind of focusing on both. Yeah. But they do have huge ties. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause people ask me all the time, and I'm like, I don't know much about that field. I will say, like sleep apnea, most people who I've had in the lab who have sleep apnea, most of them don't realize they have it. There's every once in a while people like, I know I have it. Most of the time you don't. And sleep apnea, basically you stop breathing when you sleep. And depending on how often you stop breathing, that's the severity of it. So that's one of the main things I check for, because you get people.
That's great.
Yes, it's more common with men. Yes, it's more common if you have a larger neck circumference. So if you ever see someone where it goes head, shoulders, and it just skips the neck, there's probably a good chance they have sleep apnea. So these are all things that are more common. But I have seen people who are 130 pounds and have terrible sleep apnea. So you never really
this is so important to hear. You know, it can just be anatomical, you know, like we know some of our Eastern Asian population, but they notoriously are very thin, have horrendous sleep apnea. You know, it's all anatomical, you know. And then for postmenopausal women, their rate starts to, you know, become, you know, equivalent to the frequency in men, just because we think estrogen may have some level of protection against sleep apnea. And then women's symptoms don't tend to be as prominent sometimes. The snoring isn't tend to be as prominent, so it's often underdiagnosed. But if you snore regularly, half of adults that snore regularly have sleep apnea, which is kind of frightening. So if you have a bed partner and you both snore regularly, there's a 75% chance that at least one of you has sleep apnea. You know,
I like the quick
go get it checked. Go get it checked out. the numbers are not in your favor. You know,
so yeah. But for anybody listening, therapies. You really do have to talk with your doctor, who will refer you typically to a sleep physician. It's not something you generally just walk into a sleep lab. I've had people show up at night like, "Hey, I want a sleep study." I'm like, "That's not how this works." Like, unfortunately, no.
You don't want that bill. You don't want that bill.
Yeah. That too. So yeah, just, you know, talk with your doctor, get checked out. If you snore, like, they'll ask you some questions, and if you're basically like, if you have enough things, like you snore, you feel tired during the day, even just being male, over a certain age, over a certain weight, these are things that will, you know, qualify you essentially to get a sleep study. So get it checked out if you're concerned.
And you can do it at home. There's a lot of home sleep studies now. You know, a lot of insurance are pushing folks to home sleep tests. The technology is getting better, you know, so they're becoming more accurate.
Sleep apnea, you might not know you have it, you might have it, just get checked out. I mean, I see it every night, so obviously I have to.
And on that note, perhaps we should talk about the stigma surrounding CPAP.
Oh yes, so CPAP.
I get a lot of people,
I mean, people No, go ahead, Liam. Sorry. Yeah.
I just get a lot of people who don't want to get CPAP because of they have to wear it at night. They have a bed partner or something like that. They don't want to be seen with it. They're single and they're like, I don't want to have my date come over. And I hold on, let me put on my Darth Vader mask. I get that a lot. So I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. Who is it? Jennifer Garner, you know, wore CPAP in this movie she did recently. And I'm like, that's what we need more of, you know, like people that are showing that it doesn't have to be, you know, this terrible look to you, you know, when you're wearing the CPAP, you can look good and wear CPAP, but it's uncomfortable. And many people that are prescribed CPAP don't end up wearing it because of discomfort. It's important to know there are a lot of options now, you know, when it comes to the type of mask, the fit of the mask, whether it covers your whole face, your nose and mouth, just your nose, sits under your nose. And so keep working and also know that your brain is amazing in that if you do something consistently for like a week or two, even though it's so painful, magically your brain starts getting used to it and makes sleep 100%. Much easier. So even if the first few days are horrendous, just push through it and you might be amazed at what comes out the other side. So
yeah, I see that all the time with patients. I've had so many patients go from I will never wear this to I will never spend a night without it, because that couple weeks are very difficult. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of like you said, there's a lot of different type of masks out there. Some that I'm like, actually, that's not too bad. Unfortunately, in like a lot of times in movies and TV shows, you see them with the big full face masks, which are the ones that cover the nose and the mouth. And it looks like Darth Vader, and the machines are loud as shit, like, and I'm like, what are you doing? But like, is this machine from 1995? What is going on? Like, the machines are like the size of alarm clocks now, and they're quiet. And like, there's so much, they're not nearly as bad as they used to be, I'll say.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and super quiet, and your bed partner will also probably end up loving it because you're not going to be snoring and restless and jerking around all the time.
You won't be an asshole during the day because you'll actually be sleeping.
So also a benefit of CPAP. Correct, yeah. CPAP is anti-assholery. Yeah.
They should rebrand me that, their new tagline.
Yeah, forget treat sleep apnea, treats assholery. Yeah.
Are you tired of being an asshole? Or more importantly, is everyone tired of you being an asshole? Try CPAP.
There's a lot of people on the internet I want to send some CPAPs to now.
That's great. So CPAP, talk with your doctor, get that checked out 100%. But it's really true that there's a stigma behind all of it. Narcolepsy has a huge stigma for people who have narcolepsy. Yes. You see it on TV where people just fall asleep, just standing up and they fall asleep. Like that is like
just the not narcolepsy.
severe sleep apnea, or sorry, not sleep apnea, narcolepsy ever. So, you know, like it's common. It's, you know, you have to, again, if you feel like you have narcolepsy, you want to talk with your doctor. A lot of times it can be tied with emotion. So if you feel strong emotions, you might feel tired, which is terrible for people. It's like, you know, I just feel bad for people.
I'll tell you, anyone that feels like they're sleeping, you know, adequate time, or even, you know, has a hard time staying asleep and feels really, really sleepy during the day, because a lot of our narcolepsy patients actually have very fragmented sleep. Definitely talk to your doctor. Yes. You know, narcolepsy is a moderate to really severe form of just sleepiness. So whenever you're like quiet and relaxed and you're in a meeting or you're the pastor in the car and you're always falling asleep, you know, that's the level of moderate to severe sleepiness. And cataplexy, which is what you're describing, Liam, is some people have this muscle atonia that takes over their bodies when they experience typically anger or laughter. And that can be really subtle. It can be just a little bit of difficulty with speaking. It can be your head starts to drop a little bit, your shoulders start to drop. We'll probably diagnose one or two people with narcolepsy just listening to this podcast that didn't know they had it.
Oh, yeah.
But about 60% of folks that have narcolepsy also have this cataplexy phenomenon. And if you have this where you suddenly start feeling weak in the setting of laughter or anger and you're really sleepy during the day, you almost certainly have narcolepsy. So you want to talk to your physician about that.
So remove the stigma behind sleeping disorders. Talk with your doctor. Yes. Get it checked out.
Totally.
That's the other thing people always ask me about. So I think we got to talk about marijuana and sleep, because I get asked about it a lot. From what I have seen, there's not a ton of research on it because it's still sort of illegal. So it makes it studying
down there anyway.
True.
Is it legal up there?
Yep.
Yeah, interesting. Well, most of our studies for marijuana come from the 70s, you know, and, you know, it shows kind of a mixed picture. One is that it does at you know, lower doses, it does help you fall asleep faster. And so it does take away some of that, you know, sleep latency, similar to alcohol. but it's also a potent REM suppressant, you know, so it does keep you out of REM sleep. And so the question is, you know, what's, you know, is it truly beneficial or a net negative? The jury's still out on that, you know.
My personal anecdote on it, having tried it for sleep, is especially if you dose it a little too high, it definitely is a sleep interrupter. You get that kick of being high in the middle of the night. You're just and you get like that hazy wake up, like, yeah, I don't know if I'm asleep right now. But you know you're not asleep because you get up in the morning and you're like, oh, I slept like crap.
Right. Anecdotally,
we need to do a sleep study on you.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Anecdotally, from the people I've talked to, they always say, like, when I'm using it, my dreams are gone. I don't have any dreams, which sort of makes sense because, as you said, it is sort of a REM suppressant, and REM is generally when you dream. So, you know, there's probably something that goes along with that connection. I would tell people, like, you kind of just have to wait. If you can't sleep without it and it's the thing that helps you sleep, a lot of people who have PTSD or other, you know, other things that make it difficult for them to sleep, it's the thing that helps. And I'm like, well, you know, I think you pros and cons. Like, if it's the thing that helps you, then you go with it. I mean, it's everybody's
right.
Yeah. You know, I certainly can't give that my seal of approval, you know, from the medical side, but you know, I hear what you're saying. And sometimes I don't argue with success, you know, like I'm like, if it's working, it's working, but I still always encourage folks, you know, there are great therapies that are effective that, you know, a lot of people just haven't tried and they feel like they are destined to just keep trying random, you know, supplements and things on their own.
Yeah.
You know, use a professional, you know?
I think that's a thing is that people kind of, it's a good thing we started with the basics because a lot of people skip over that and go for the other things. They skip over the sleep hygiene and they're, oh, we'll try the marijuana instead.
Right. So, if you've tried everything else, I'm not going to tell you to not do something because everybody's different and you have to, we always say on this podcast, you have to find what works for you. So I'm not telling you to go out and buy weed, but I'm not going to shame you for it.
At the very least, do the basics first before you go out and buy weed.
Which I can say because
it's legal here. So if you want to go buy weed, go buy weed.
Getting the sleep car moving forward. I kind of say if you have like multiple flat tires, you know, you gotta fix all of them, you know? So sleep hygiene, maybe one of your flat tires. It may have been is another flat tire. You got to fix them all to move things forward, and that can be tricky to find that combo.
Well, what about, like, so you said they go to supplements. People will ask, I'm sure, so I think I have to ask, like, melatonin, you know, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah. Melatonin is, you know, has become what I call a sleep candy. You know, it's just being handed out to everybody now. And the tough thing is in the medical community, it's also becoming really common for physicians to say, hey, try some melatonin as kind of like the initial knee jerk response. But the problem is we get almost zero training in sleep disorders in medical school and residency, even in pediatrics residency, got almost zero lectures on how to handle sleep issues. And so if you tell a doctor, I don't sleep well, they may not know what to do with that information. They'll might go, hey, try some. This is not a jab at other physicians. Same thing with my training. I just didn't get a lot of sleep training until I did a sleep fellowship. Melatonin, you know, it's a supplement. It's not FDA regulated. It's the dark hormone that our brain naturally makes. It has data to support its use when you want to adjust your circadian rhythm timing. Yes. And when you want to do that? Well, when you have jet lag or when you have shift work, when you have delayed sleep-wake phase syndrome, which is everything is pushed later. So your preferred sleep time is much later and your preferred wake time is later, but that doesn't jive with your work schedule or your school schedule. Those are use cases where melatonin can be very helpful. Turns out it's the timing as opposed to the dose. So we're talking like really low doses, like even half a milligram milligram.
Yeah, like
you know?
1 milligram. Yeah. People take 10. Like I totally. Take 10 every night. I'm like, I don't think you need
that. It's always on the shelf in 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams.
That's right.
It's so hard to find it in one.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, it's just data shows that if you're taking it early, like 4 to 6 hours prior to your current sleep onset time, that's good for shifting your circadian rhythms earlier. Now, there are other cases. If you're otherwise healthy and you don't have a circadian rhythm issue, melatonin usually plays no role whatsoever. But there are other situations. Like, for example, I treat a lot of children that are on the autism spectrum. We know melatonin can be helpful there as a sleep aid to actually help them with sleepiness. So there are some cases, but usually under the guidance of hopefully a sleep doc or a neurologist or somebody else that's comfortable treating sleep issues in these nuanced kind of situations.
So yeah, I always say like, I don't recommend it for like every night, not because I think it's going to kill you or anything like that, but generally there's just something else going on that you're trying to like treat with the melatonin. So I'd rather you try and get that figured out than take 10 milligrams every night, which is not necessary.
Totally. Yep, 100% agree. And these bottles, they can have whatever they, you know, they can put anything in them. Yeah. And they've done studies that show, like, you know, a lot of these bottles have no melatonin in them. Some of these melatonin gummies have, like, serotonin, like CBD in them. And it's just a wild, wild west when it comes to melatonin bottling, you know.
But so do you know anything about CBD? It, you know? I don't know jack about, like, CBD and sleep, basically. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think there's much out there, honestly. Yeah. You know, a lot of the studies that were done back in the day are really with THC, you know, not much with CBD.
As far as I know, there's, like, not a lot of research on that, so that's my response when people ask me. Like,
I think that's fair.
I can give my anecdote that CBD didn't do anything for me.
For some people, it seems nothing. Other people, it seems to help. Yeah. All right, so are there any other like sleep supplements that like? I don't know. I guess you get asked a lot about, or like,
magnesium. Magnesium is like the new go-to, you know, and people like swear by it. You know, I'll say that the data just does not support kind of the hype that's around it right now. There is some data in elderly with insomnia that magnesium can help, but they're also more likely to be magnesium deficient. Whereas the general population, despite what people are saying online about like, oh, 80% of people are magnesium deficient. Oh, and by the way, here's a magnesium lotion that you can absorb through your eyeball when you brush it in, you know, like it's, people just aren't magnesium deficient, you know, like it's really rare. You know, they've done studies in like the critical care population. Yes, you might see some magnesium deficiency, but if you're just walking around, our diets are pretty magnesium fortified. You know, it's hard to be truly deficient in it.
What's the other one? People like Z-Quil, I can't remember the fucking
All of these things have just antihistamines in them, you know, like similar to Benadryl. You know, they all have different types of antihistaminergic that are available over the counter. And they, you know, they market it as like the ultimate like sleep cure. Well, you're just putting a Band-Aid on that sleep problem, you know, and the antihistamines, especially Benadryl, studies show that you know, it does help for a few days. And then the improvement goes away after like day 4 or 5, but the side effects persist, you know, the cognitive slowing, some anti, you know, cholinergic stuff, dry mouth, et cetera, all that persists, yet your sleep benefit goes away. So that's a big no for me.
Yeah. Right. For like a day, like you have one day where it's like your sleep is a little messed up and you need to go to bed a little earlier or something. I'm like, okay, I can see it. But taking these things every day, I just don't think is the way to go. That's basically my attitude towards all of them.
Yes, 100% agree.
The other thing that I wanted to make sure I get to, because I'm fucked by it, sleep shift worker disorder. Just like, do you have any recommendations for people who work, you know, the fucking 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., the thing that I work?
Try not to, you know.
I highly recommend that. That is my biggest recommendation for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to get too far into the science, but you know, it has shown to have health consequences of always 100%. Working the night shift. You know.
And can so that's I, okay. Listen. Sorry. Can I just say I have to say this fucking little thing, because I went to school for sleep medicine. First day of like sleep classes, they're like, okay, working nights, you are at increased risk for diabetes, hypertension, and they're just going down this laundry list of things. And eventually she says cancer. One of the kids stands up, closes the book, walks out, never comes back. I'm pretty sure he went to accounting. Like he heard that and he's like, I'm done. And I'm like, you know what? Fair. Like if you're going to do it, might as well do it day one where you're like, I'm not, no, thank you. Which is 100%.
That's the right way to do. I mean, I think it's only fair to share that information with you up front, because otherwise I don't think it's ethical to like, you know, be like, oh yeah, everything's totally fine in this occupation. No. Like if you work with radiation, you should know that this could be harmful to your health. Similarly, if you're working overnight, you should know that it could be harmful to your health.
Condolences. That's my condolences.
That's right. Yes. Yes. Totally. Well, I will tell you that it's, you know, if you have to flip flop, that's the hardest. You know, I oftentimes get this question.
Swing shift.
Yes. Yeah. If you're like day shift and night shift, you're working 12 hours, that is just painful and brutal. And so my goal here is ideally don't do it often if you can arrange your schedule such that you're not doing it often. And then if you have different shifts, like if you have, let's say it's an 8-hour shift, it's much easier to go from a morning start to an afternoon start than to a night start.
Right.
As opposed to the other way around, going from a morning start, then a night start, then an afternoon start. So if you can delay, that can usually help you, because it's much easier to delay your start time. And then that's the situation where melatonin may be helpful after discussion with your physician, where if you're trying to flip too quickly, melatonin can help you make that transition much faster.
Yeah, I will say,
but it's tough.
People who work nights like myself, staying on the same schedule is what's best. So like that's why shift work, like a swing shift is it destroys you. Like you're going back and forth, your brain doesn't know what the fuck, which way is up, black is white, east is west. I don't know. Yep. It's terrible. So working, if you work overnights, trying to stay on the same schedule, even on your off days, like for me, I stay up with my daughter and then I still go to bed at like 7 a.m. every day. That's so smart. I try and stay on this, which is hard because like shit isn't open at like 2 a.m. So like, you know, I understand it's a hundred. It's so frustrating. But if you can stay on that same schedule and make sure, especially for my people who work nights, make sure your room is dark and quiet. And like that is, it's always important. But for the people who are sleeping during the day, it's even more important because there's shit. People are mowing their lawns and shit. It's I know it sucks. Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah. People are playing basketball and the pets are barking and there's telemarketers are calling, you know, like it's just, you can't get away from it.
Imagine
you know,
if you were mowing your lawn at like 2 a.m. People would be like, what the fuck are you doing? Stop doing that. That's you that's all the time. This is you because people are mowing their lawn at the fucking normal times. And you're like, God damn it. Right. I'm just trying to get some fucking sleep here. So I
love, you know, I'll tell you, I love like a good pair of earplugs for folks. Yeah. You know, like I get these foam ones from like these purple ones. And my trick here is I don't put like the rounded edge inside. I put the flat edge inside. I squeeze it down and that actually creates like the tighter seal. And then my test is if you rub your fingers next to it, you shouldn't hear your fingers rubbing. That's a good seal for your earplug. And that can eliminate a lot of noise. And then in that situation, white noise may also be helpful for folks that are really trying to sleep during the day and drowning out some of the, as long as it's not too loud. Drown out that.
Can
stuff.
I ask who the there's got to be someone out there who's listening because I need answers. Okay. I have a white noise app. Okay. And there are options for water dripping. Yeah. What?
That's like torture,
a psychopath.
Right?
I mean, where it's just like drip, 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 or the clock ticking, tick tock, tick. You need a psychiatric evaluation. Yep. I'm sorry. You need to be checked out by all the doctors if you listen to that sort of stuff to go to sleep. You're
like having music that's going dun 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 all night, and you're like, "Yeah, I can fall asleep to that."
What is happening? The wind chimes. There's wind chimes to go to sleep. What the?
My goal is always, if you're going to have a noise, you want the noise to be steady and consistent, no fluctuations. I don't like even music. I like white noise, consistent rain. You know, I don't even like oceans because it's like up and down, up and down. Yeah. I mean, just find like a pink noise, brown noise, white noise, rain, you know, a river rumbling, you know, that's all fine. Yeah.
It's like they took the whole point of white noise and said, fuck that. We're going the opposite way. I'm just mad. I'm just mad at whoever decided to put city streets. That's an option. People are just like chatting and talking and cars are going by. I'm done. I'm done with the white noise. Fine. Whatever.
Well, everyone's different here, Liam, and some people may have gotten used to it living in a big city, and then they move to like the rural, you know. Yeah,
we are people that move from the city to rural areas, and they want that city sound.
They might need it. They might need it. That's right. A little bit of ambulances and police cars rolling by. They might appreciate that.
If it works for you, great. But you should also get checked out. That's all I'm saying.
So, do you have an opinion on Seroquel getting prescribed for a sleep aid, since Seroquel is usually prescribed as a sleep aid because of a side effect rather than as a on-label?
I have huge reservations about using it solely as a sleep aid. Huge reservations. If you're using it as part of an underlying psychiatric condition that merits using Seroquel, and you can benefit from the side effect of the sleepiness, fantastic, you know. But by itself, it's a pretty harsh way to get just sleep. Yeah. And it comes along with its own fair share of side effects and labs you have to monitor, et cetera. So I would give that a big no.
What do you feel about propofol going back for sleep, to the Michael Jackson sleeping aid? What do you think about how do you feel about putting yourself in a coma every time you go to sleep? By the way, people, coma is not sleep. There's a difference between comas sleep is still an active process. For anybody listening, sleep is not just this like nothing happens. There's a ton of shit happening while you're sleeping. You can't just be like hit them over the head and they'll sleep. That is different than sleep.
Okay. Sedation is not sleep. Anesthesia is not sleep. And this is another interesting thing that I like to share, which is I think VIPs get like the worst healthcare, you know, like the people out in like California thinking they have access to all this new and amazing newfangled stuff. And they're seeking like these magic cures and people are like CTing their whole bodies. I'm like, y'all are getting like the worst healthcare, you know, like VIPs get the worst treatment because they think they've like stumbled on some. And they're like charlatans that will be like, oh, you know, come with me. And I'm, you know, you guys are uncovering a lot of these guys. And I know you do. I know what you do. You call them out. But so these true. VIPs out there, you know, they get, and there's some data to support that VIPs, you know, you don't ask them those questions that we typically ask that might be a little personal, but that are important. We cater to what they want and they end up getting worse care. You know, so any Hollywood celebrities listening, just go see like a legitimate doc and stop talking to Dr. Doolittle from the, you know, who's offering you like, who knows
Dr. Sebi.
You know?
Oh God. It's so true. Like if you look at, we talk about like the blue zones a lot where people like live the longest. Yes. They're like, they're eating like beans and rice and they just exercise and move. They don't have fancy
They don't sit around a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's the amazing thing about health is like, we know what works, you know, right. Like, we actually know what works and people are looking to do all sorts of other things that are like,
no, they want the fountain. They want the fountain of youth. They want that, that fancy supplement secret pill that they can get.
Do what works. Do what's already been shown to work, you know?
But that's kind of why I was asking about the Seroquel, is because I know that going back to the doctors don't really know what to do in regards to sleep, and they give you the melatonin. And I see with a lot of people, they end up, the next step from that is doctors prescribe them Seroquel.
Mm. That's an interesting practice. And I don't know if this is more Canada specific, you know, but there are definitely down here from what I've seen, there are some other kind of go-tos before we get to the Seroquels of the world. And that can include things like, you know, antihistamines. It can include things like gabapentin, for example, or trazodone or amitriptyline. These are things that can work double as sleep aids that are usually used for other indications. Clonidine is another one that's usually a blood pressure medicine by trade that can help with sleepiness. So Seroquel tends to be much further down the list in my experience here.
Interesting. Yeah, that's why I take Viagra, is for my blood pressure.
Yeah, is that it?
It's just for blood pressure. It's just for blood pressure, okay? It's a medical condition, and I prefer you not make fun of it. But yeah, no, I just love what you said about the VIP, the whole, like, there's the one guy that's trying to like make himself 30 years younger or whatever by taking like every supplement. It's 100% people, there is no magicness. It's all we know. That I know the normal shit is boring. We know, hey, get enough sleep and move around more and eat vegetables is boring, but we're going to fucking keep telling you that shit because that's the stuff that works. And there is no fucking fancy, super crazy pill you're going to get.
Here's another one of what I've discovered, which is when I look online and social media, people that are usually like harping all these, like, you know, our solutions are usually, you know, men that are at the age where they realize they're not going to live forever.
Right.
And they're trying to find this magic solution to help themselves live longer. And, you know, when you're 80, you're probably not going to want to live another 20 years, to be honest. You know, like, yeah, I don't meet any 80-year-olds that are like, let me just knock out another 20 and let me, you know, take all these supplements to get myself another 20. It's the quality of your life that's super important. And in quantity, although we emphasize that, you really got to think more about the quality of the 100%. Years that you have. And you're not going to be worrying about, you know, eking out extra time when you're completely that old, agree. Honestly. Yeah.
Completely agree. Oh, before we go. Okay. So before we go, I got to run through some like very quick, like sleep things that are fun. Okay. So, cause this is my opportunity to talk about sleep.
Yeah. Before you do your sleep things.
Fine. What do you got to do?
We did have one question that I don't know if you're going to be able to answer or anything, but we did have a viewer question. And if you don't know what to do with it, I will just cut this part.
Sounds good.
So anyway, I've got Lola here who wrote in, I have a disorder where I don't produce cortisol, thyroid, estrogen, testosterone, growth hormone. She supplements all these things to get normal levels as possible, but she notices that she doesn't seem to need as much sleep as the guidelines generally say that you should get. And if I try to force myself to sleep more, I sometimes struggle to fall asleep the next day. And I think that instantly goes back to where you start at the beginning, where you don't have to force yourself to feel like you need to sleep the guidelines. Maybe you just don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like she has what we call panhypopit, which is where your pituitary is just not making all the stuff that it needs to make. It sometimes comes along with other sleep-related issues. Or brain-related issues, which could also then, you know, cause sleep-related issues. So without knowing her detailed medical history, I agree. If she feels well off her lower amounts of sleep, you know, you got to listen to what your body is telling you. And if you're okay, as long as you're not like over-treating with Synthroid, for example, for, you know, the thyroid issue, or you're not taking too much hydrocortisone and that's keeping giving you extra alertness, you know, as long as your levels are balanced and your endocrinologist is following along and you feel like you're sleeping well, you could be a short sleeper. I don't know if it's because of that underlying right. disorder or in spite of it. That's just how her brain was, her brain was formed.
Yeah. Okay. And what about pets in bed? Do I have to cover Pippin's ears?
No pets in bed. Yes. You know, this is, I feel, you know, and this is tough because there are some people that say, well, listen, I have anxiety and I love having my pet there. And if that's helping you with sleep, again, I'm not going to argue with success. You know,
That's me is like my animal is an emotional support animal. I love having him curled up beside
me.
Yeah.
And that's your situation. By all means, you know, do what works for you. If you have a choice though, you know, and you're not in that situation, ideally out of the room, both from an allergen standpoint,
so I was going to say from allergies, what I'm thinking too. Is,
Yes, absolutely. Allergies. And then your pets, you know, they wrestle to any small sound. They have super hearing. They have a super smell, you know, like an ice cream, like a pizza truck walks by. They're probably going to get up and be like, hey, what's going on? And you don't need to, you know, bear the brunt of that. So, pets out of the room, ideally.
Okay, all yours, Liam.
I need to run through some fun things about sleep. Okay, we've got through the things, but we need to go through the fun things. Okay, so first off, do you know the record for most times awake without any sleep?
Was that 11 days?
Mm-hmm. Just over 11 days without sleep, which that is fucking nutso bananas.
That's bonkers. Wow. That's bonkers.
There was one radio DJ who broke the record at the time. It was like 6 or 7 days, right? And he was like going to do it for charity. They kept him away at like day three. He started seeing like spiders in his shoe, started, you know, hallucinating, which is normal because it's your brain going like, what the fuck is happening? Basically, like when you're a POW, the first thing they do is keep you awake because it just breaks your ass. So he did it for like 6 days. They kept him awake. He slept for 24 hours after that, and he never fully left his state of psychosis. He still saw things. He still had hallucinations. Wow. His wife left him. He lost his job. So, like, that goes to show you that like, they're thinking there's probably some underlying mental disorder that the lack of sleep is what brought it out. Now, the person who did it for 11 days was totally fine after. So, like, you never really know, so just don't. The Guinness Book of World Records, as far as I know, doesn't keep track of most time awake anymore because people are getting fucking injured basically doing it. So don't do that, by the way. Not smart. Same reason they don't keep the record for the fattest cat, I think, because, people suck.
Yes, also don't make your cats fat.
Yes. Yeah. The biggest skydive without a parachute probably is not a record that they're keeping either, you know.
So, I wouldn't do it.
I would tell you that anecdotally, they say that you die quicker of sleep deprivation than food deprivation. You know, you can go longer without food than you can without sleep, you know? So,
yeah, I would 100% agree with that. So sleep. REM behavior disorder is a fascinating one. That's one of my favorite disorders when it comes to sleep. So basically you have REM sleep. That's kind of when you dream mostly, as I stated before. Your body kind of though paralyzes you when you sleep because, you know, you don't want to get up and move around. But when you have REM behavior disorder, it doesn't really do that. So you sort of act out your dreams. Now, normally it just involves you moving your arms and legs and stuff. There was one patient who sat up in the middle of the night and started dealing poker cards in his sleep. So that can happen.
Super dangerous.
There was one case of not homicide because he was acquitted, but one guy did kill someone else in his sleep because he was having a nightmare or something like that. And so they brought him in for a sleep study afterwards. Of course, he got up, walked around. So if you have REM behavior disorder, you get one free kill. One homicide.
You did not just say that on the podcast.
Don't kill anybody.
Is that where you get your lungs and your nose to try eating Liam?
Listen, well, I'm saying. Go ahead.
I would say it's funny because it's actually not funny, but the legal implications of some of our parasomnias, like the one you just mentioned, these interesting things that happen at night. You know, it's an area, there's another one that's a non-REM parasomnia called sexsomnia, in which, and this is likely very underdiagnosed, but similar to sleepwalking, you start initiating like sexual type behaviors while you're sleeping. And of course, for a bed partner, that's what the Viagra is for.
That's what the Viagra is for. I don't need that during my sexsomnia times. Absolutely. You're 100% right. Yeah.
So REM behavior disorder, I'll tell you that, you know, it can be medication related, but if you have it out of the blue where you're actually acting out your dreams and usually you have really vivid dream recollection and your bed partner who witnesses it was like, you were punching. And he's like, I was dreaming about being in a boxing ring. You know, if you have that, you actually should go see a neurologist because a lot of these patients will end up developing a neurodegenerative condition. typically in the, this is kind of nuanced, but in the synucleinopathy family, which is Parkinson's, et cetera. And so it's a fascinating disorder. And it's also why I think of all the neurodegenerative conditions, we're probably going to be able to cure things like Parkinson's earliest, because we have a canary in the coal mine. Like, we know this is going to happen for a good chunk of the population that has idiopathic REM behavior disorder, where it comes out of the blue. So, well, see your doctor. It can be super dangerous.
Yeah. I have to send somebody. I already know somebody that I'm going to be sending this podcast to, because he does do that.
Yeah, very interesting. And again, it can be med related. You know, the SSRIs and SNRIs can sometimes also cause this type of stuff. But because it's so dangerous, you definitely want to talk to your physician about it.
What about, so I'm blanking on the name of what it's called, basically where your mind wakes up before your body. So you kind of wake up, but you can't move.
Yeah, sleep paralysis.
Sleep paralysis.
Yeah,
sleep paralysis.
Yeah, that was so interesting.
Yeah. So what do you, so like, it's, I know it's kind of, it can happen to people like once in a very blue moon, but like typically it happens more with people with narcolepsy, correct? Or like, is
yes,
connected to that?
That's right. Very common if you have narcolepsy, but in the folks that don't have narcolepsy, it's often associated with sleep deprivation. So yeah, okay. I've experienced this once or twice during, you know, late night studying during medical school. But yeah, sleep deprivation is usually the culprit for folks that don't have narcolepsy.
So you basically wake up, but you can't move. And sometimes it comes with auditory or visual hallucinations. So you can see things that aren't real, hear things that aren't real. So like that
That's
is,
right.
So if that happens to
the
you on a regular
I
basis.
The first experienced it, I was like, early teens, and of course I didn't know what sleep paralysis even was, and so I was like freaking the fuck out.
It's freaky scary. Shit. So if that happens to you regularly, see a physician. Like if it's once every like years and years, like, you know, sleep, it might be sleep deprivation, something like that. But if that's happening to you often, people tell me like, oh yeah, that happens all the time, like, oh, da, 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 blah, blah. Go talk to someone.
Yeah.
You need to talk to someone.
Yes, absolutely. For sure.
Okay. Yep. So yeah, that one's interesting. So if anybody asked me, like, what's the worst disorder to have? One of them up there for me is Klein-Levin syndrome. It sounds absolutely awful. So Klein-Levin were two doctors. They were so they were basically, so correct me if I'm wrong, like I'm not an expert on Klein-Levin syndrome, but basically you sleep less and less over time. You're not able to sleep as much as you need, and slowly it gets more difficult to sleep, and you just kind of sleep less and less until you die, essentially. Like what?
So you're actually talking about a disease known as familial fatal insomnia.
Okay, so
Klein-Levin is much more benign than familial fatal insomnia, but it's still a tough disorder. Yeah. So familial fatal insomnia, we think I believe that's a prion-mediated disorder over time you have just neurodegeneration. You can't tell sleep versus wake states, and ultimately fatal.
Klein-Levin has to do with having difficulty sleeping, right? Like,
it's intermittent periods of excessive sleepiness. And so it's periodic hypersomnia in which you're sleeping for, you know, it can be like 20 plus hours in a day. It can last for like a day or multiple days. When you're awake during those episodes, you tend to be not yourself. You can be confused. You can be altered. A sense of like kind of like derealization. You're just not yourself during these episodes. And you tend to eat a lot. And you can also have hypersexuality type presentation as well during the times that you are awake. And it occurs periodically. And we have no idea why it happens. We have no
that's just one of those rare ones. Like, I know it's super rare.
Super rare. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, what about the sleeping sickness of the West African sleeping sickness by the tsetse fly?
Yeah. I can't say that I haven't seen any.
Have you never seen anybody with that?
No. It's but it's a lot of these, unfortunately, like infectious inflammatory conditions can come along with excessive sleepiness, because we know that inflammatory mediators can also make your brain just feel sleepier, you know. So
because if you don't there's a tsetse fly in Africa, like it bites you, and then it's called the sleeping sickness because you sleep more and more. And I'm like, I don't really know why, and I don't even know we know exactly why, but yeah, it's just fascinating. So weird.
I'll have to look into that. I don't know why. It's never come across my desk, but yeah.
If you ever get into it now after this podcast, the West African sleeping sickness case, I need to know about it.
For sure, I'll come back and chat with you all about it. Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I just wanted to go through some weird things with sleep. Yes. Sleep is cool. Strange. That's fine.
Sleep is strange. It's a fascinating world, you know, and there's something new every day, which is the amazing thing about sleep. Yeah.
Liam's over there thinking.
I'm just thinking about it. Yeah, so a lot of rare disorders, but mostly get your sleep hygiene checked. Okay, so get that, you know, figure that shit out, you know, all the things, the simple things we said. If that's not working, go see your doctor who will refer you to a sleep doctor. Then they can check you for things like sleep apnea, narcolepsy, all those things that are a bit more common. Get that fucking treated, because CPAP compliance is like, what, 50%? Like, it's not high. I don't remember really the exact numbers. But it's not very good. Most people who are prescribed CPAP don't use it. So that's not great.
That's right.
So if you have an issue, get it treated. There are other options besides CPAP. If anybody was curious, talk with your doctor. Honestly, from my experience, they're not really that great. CPAP is definitely the gold standard for a reason. It works the most effective and the fewest number of side effects. So if you can't do it, try other things, but definitely try that first. And sleep well and don't be your worst.
Anti-asshole. That's our goal. Yes. And brush your eyes. That's right. And brush your eyes. Sleep. The anti-assholery treatment. Yes.
Yeah, we always talk about, like, you know, your coffee, like the coffee mugs are like, don't talk to me until I have my coffee. Like, well, definitely sleep first. Definitely sleep well first. And then the coffee sure is important, but without the sleep, the coffee ain't doing shit.
Yep. Agreed.
And avoid caffeine before bed. I think we said that. But also, limit caffeine later in the day.
Some people say
all the coffee I want and be fine. Like, no, that doesn't work. Oh, and people always say, like, with ADHD, they're like, oh, caffeine has the opposite effect on me. I'm like, I still don't think you should be drinking a bunch of caffeine before bed, even if you don't feel like it does anything.
If y'all invite me back, we'll talk about the caffeine, bad sleep, caffeine cycle that's made Starbucks, like, you know, incredibly rich. But that's a story for another day. Yeah,
that's smart. Yes, we need to do that in the future. Okay,
but next merch, we should make like pillowcases that are like sleep, the anti-assholery.
I love it. I love it. There's definitely, I'd buy that.
There's definitely some options we could do with like sleeping stuff. I like it. I like it. Okay. Well, you gotta tell me where to find you.
It comes with some magnesium. Oh yeah. You can find me anywhere that social media is consumed. I'm that sleep doc.
That sleep doc.
All the good places that social media is concerned. That sleep doc.
All the good places. Yeah. There are no good places on social media. you can find them on all the bad places in social media.
All the bad places that are keeping us awake and angering us. Yes.
Find me on the places where you can't be before bed, or your sleep will be shit. That's right. Watch me.
I'll shame you into going to sleep on those. I'll be like, are you still watching me?
You'll be the Papa Swolio of sleep.
You can use it for good. Every 9:30, release a video. Be like, go to sleep. Go to sleep right now. Turn your phone off.
I did like an adult bedtime story. You know, I did that. I'd be like, hey, here's a bedtime story for adults. Because I think adults could use a bedtime story from time to time.
Have you seen Papa Julio's stuff?
I haven't, no.
No.
Jim Bro just yells at people.
Yeah, he just yells at the camera. All his videos are literally, go to the gym. I don't care that you've done nothing. Go to the gym.
I have seen this.
I'm sure you've seen
it. Shut up and go to the gym. You need to go the heck to sleep, or I'm going to put you to sleep.
Yeah. I think he did a video actually, go to sleep. And I was like, actually, I don't mind this. This is the one video I don't mind where he's like, go to sleep. Turn your phone off, right? I'm like, you know what? That's fair. That one I can
do. I don't have that same physical presence to be able to pull that off, I think. You know?
You should just like throw a pillow at the camera. Just like go to sleep.
That's a good one too. But I think you should just put on a nice like smoking jacket, get a pipe, sit in your chair, and the camera just comes around and you're just like,
I guess it should be relaxing, right?
I should be taking notes. I should be taking notes on it. I like it. I like it. Absolutely. But let me tell you the reasons why you should be sleeping based on the data. You know, a more sophisticated plea for sleep. Yes.
And relaxing. And then the last like minute or whatever of the video is just like white noise or something. Just like go to sleep. And then you just let it play. We'll figure it out. There's something here. There's something here.
There's something there. Brilliant. For sure.
Okay. Y'all can help me figure that out.
Yeah.
Don't be your worst.
That's our tagline. Don't be your worst.
Theme for today. Yes.
Hey, wasn't that a great time? Listen to the podcast. You were just, I'm assuming you knew or you were just listening to in moderation. So if you go ahead and hit the 5-star button, is that a thing? The like button?
That's a thing. No. Yeah.
The like button 5 on YouTube. Stars. If you're on YouTube, hit the like button. Not the dislike button. That's a bad button. The bad like button. Button.
Bad Don't button. Touch.
Hit all the other buttons, the share, you can go check out
all those things.
Subscribe. Go check out our Patreon. Yeah. We do have a Patreon. It's free to join if you want, or you could give us money. That'd be really cool. Like $1 or $2. It doesn't matter. Whatever you have.
That's where you'll find all the news for this.
We're super appreciative. You can find all sorts of other stuff there. We do giveaways, I think, sometimes.
Sometimes.
All that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So peace.